Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on chumbacasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's chumbacasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
From Variety, celebrating 115 years covering the business of entertainment, this is the Award Circuit Podcast.
I know he was in Fantastic Mr. Fox.
There you go. That's the only one you're actually allowed to see. I mean, literally, that's the only film you're allowed to see. I mean, you can watch Batman and Robin because it doesn't harm anyone, doesn't help anyone. But other than that, I don't think there's any, you know, I don't think there's anything I've done that you're of age yet. Yeah.
When newcomer Kalen Springle landed the part opposite George Clooney in the new film The Midnight Sky, the young star had only seen one previous Clooney film, Fantastic Mr. Fox. Clooney wasn't offended, as it's the only age-appropriate one he recommends. I'm Clayton Davis. On this bonus edition of the Variety Award Circuit podcast, we talk to George Clooney and Kalen Springle about The Midnight Sky. The pair talk about how they handled the harsh conditions of shooting in Iceland. Clooney also discusses how composer Alexandre Desplat scored the movie during COVID and also reveals details about his next film projects, The Tenant Bar and Calico Joe. It's all on this bonus edition of Variety's Award Circuit podcast. Stay close. The Midnight Sky is a post-apocalyptic story starring George Clooney as Augustine Lofthouse, a lonely scientist in the Arctic who races against time to stop a group of astronauts from returning home to a global catastrophe. He's paired with a mute stowaway named Iris, played by Kalen Springle.
That's Ether. It's a spaceship coming back from a planet that we hoped would be our future. I have to contact them before it's too late.
My journey has us returning with more answers than questions, except one question lingers in the air.
Who's our last contact with Mission Control?
3 weeks. We've lost contact with NASA and everyone else.
Is this a glitch?
You really believe that?
I have to warn them about the conditions on Earth.
Clooney is months from his 60th birthday, and he shows no signs of slowing down. The veteran actor, director, and producer is well aware of how lucky he is, and he doesn't take it for granted. As for Springle, she describes being very excited with landing the part after her London audition, particularly with the prospect of shooting in Iceland. I recently spoke to Clooney and Springle about The Midnight Sky. We began by discussing how they're doing during these very unusual pandemic times.
You know, we're all getting by. We're all sort of, certainly in the United States, we're having some of the same shared experiences in the fact that I miss my parents and I miss seeing the people that are dear to me and I care very much for and I am concerned about. I'm very lucky that I'm here at home with my kids and my wife and we're safe and we're hoping for the best. There seems to be some light at the end of this tunnel and hoping for the beginning or middle of spring for things to start to turn around.
Kalen?
Well, at the beginning of the big lockdown, I actually felt a little bit trapped because I couldn't go outside and I have to do all my learning on screen. And it was a little bit tricky because sometimes my mum was working, my dad was at work, and I didn't know what to do. So sometimes I would ask my sister and they would not help. Struggled.
Ooh, not helping you when you're asking. Did you ask George for help? Did he help you with any schoolwork?
No.
No?
No, you wouldn't come to me for help in schoolwork. That's the last thing you would do.
let's talk about this movie, The Midnight Sky. Congratulations, guys. George, congratulations. The movie is spectacular and you guys are so great in it, and it's such a beautiful film. Can you talk about shooting this in a very, very remote and cold condition, or conditions rather?
Sure. You know, it was interesting, Clayton. We were the very first thing, you know, everything the movie's kind of a two-hander, right? It's in space and so everything, we shot all of our stuff. Kaylin and I shot all of our stuff first. So the very first thing we did in mid-October was we went out to Iceland and went out onto a glacier. And some of it, you know, we were at the mercy of weather. You know, we needed weather. We needed bad weather. So sometimes, you know, we'd get out on that glacier and be a perfectly blue sky. Remember this, Kaylin? And we'd be watching and you could see this white cloud, like a dust storm coming towards you. And we'd have strings tied to one another. Remember, they gave us whistles to blow in case we got lost from one another. And I'm holding Kaylin's hand. And then, you know, then it's all hell breaks loose. And it's just, you can't see each other. You know, you can't hear each other. My eyelashes would freeze shut. Kaylin had these, you know, these big goggles on and she's wrapped up and she's still getting blown over and knocked onto the ground. And we actually remember we were digging ourselves out of into holes in the ice, and we had to walk down through an ice cave. It looks like a set, but that's a real ice cave way, way down. And it took a long time to walk down. And Kaylin was a trooper, man.
Kaylin, your first movie, and he's making you dig holes in Iceland so you could stay warm. How did that feel?
Well, it felt a little bit weird because at first he just got digging it with a shovel and then just digging it with his hand. And then he was like, come on, let's do the scene. And he just said, sit in this hole. And then we filmed it. And then when we went to that glass cave or under it, I actually felt a little bit scared because everyone else like wearing helmets and I wasn't, like a tiny bit, but wasn't that, with my coat, and I was scared to bump my head, but I was actually not that short. It was actually pretty tall, but still it was very cold.
Kaylin, there's one thing you're going to learn about working on a set in general. The rest of the crew will be covered from head to toe in protective gear while you'll be standing out there with nothing. And they're all watching you. And you're like, going, all right, okay.
And Kaylin, this was your first movie. How did you get the part? How did you end up working with George Clooney?
So first we did an audition in London and I just didn't expect anything. And then we got the phone call to meet George Grant and the casting director. And I was actually pretty excited. And then I just felt a little bit nervous. But then when I went to them, George taught me to do this, like, very important scene that Iris needs to do. And then we waited a couple of weeks and then we got the phone call that we got it. And I was like jumping up and down, like, yeah, got it. And then I thought like we were going to Iceland. And I was like, I'm going to leave my family behind, but at least I'm going to Iceland.
Well, we didn't leave all your family behind. We brought your mom, you know, you weren't on your own, you know. Not cruel.
Yeah. Wait, how did you guys decide which parent went, mom or dad? Or it just had to be mom?
How did you decide that, Kaylin?
Well, my dad always wanted to go to Iceland, but my mom just said, nope, I'm going.
Just called dibs. Good mom.
Yeah, I mean, Kaylin actually, when she came in we met with her. And, you know, there's a lot of things that, you know, were tricky about this part. One is that you don't speak at all. But the other is that one of the hardest things to do as an actor is to show fear. It's a weird thing. It's hard to, you know, you know, without it just being ridiculous. And so that was one you worry about with someone who hasn't acted in a film before, you know, could you do it? So we went outside and I just took a camera and we just ran out. Remember, we were running in the parking lot and I'd say, all right, now turn around and give me your scared face. Remember that? And she did a beautiful job. And the minute she did it, I thought, okay, well, we're going to be fine.
What do you feel, George, in the difference between directing yourself, especially in this remote location with just someone else? How do you kind of balance that, you know, obviously making sure you get the right shots and the right emotional response, but you're also worried about everything else that's going around you?
Well, it's an interesting thing. You're spinning a bunch of plates, you know. And the best way to do that, first and foremost, is to be really, really prepared, you know. So you know, we knew, you think about it, we're going to Iceland in October. So it gets light around 11:30 in the morning and it's dark by 3:00. And Kaylin being of the age she is, she only has a certain amount of time that you can shoot with her as well. And so you have to really be prepared. And then you have to add the element of chasing weather. You know, we get in a thing and all of a sudden it's too sunny or too nice. Or then we get there and it was actually not nice enough. Or, you know, there was the constant sort of thing. So you needed to really be prepared and ready for that. And then you have to be able to handle a couple of things, which is doing a scene, knowing that the camera has just moved in too quickly while you're in the middle of the scene and go, you know, cut, let's do it again, come in a little bit later and let's try it, you know. It's just, you're just balancing two things. And, you know, I've been doing it long enough now that that's not as complicated as it feels.
Kaylin, how long were you in Iceland for the entire shoot?
It was probably 4 to 5 weeks, I think.
Four, maybe?
I think it's 3.
Yeah.
And how cold are we talking there? Like, how low did the temperature get?
Okay, one time it dropped like minus 28 degrees and it was freezing.
40 degrees below wind chill factor and it was 70 mile an hour gusts. So, you know, we just get knocked over, literally knocked.
Yeah. Is this has to be the hardest shoot you've ever done, right? Like of your career.
Yeah. For every direction, if you forgetting all the stuff we had to do, then you got to go do a movie in space, which is, you know, talk to Alfonso. It's not easy to do. It was 7 or 8 months of prepping that stuff too.
Kaylin, when you were done with your parts of the shoot and you were there for 4 to 5 weeks, and this is your first movie ever, I guess, are you looking forward to your next movie? Just knowing that it's probably good chance to be a lot easier in terms of shooting conditions, unless you're just going to be the new Arctic freezing.
Yeah, she's only going to do snow movies.
Snow movies, that's it.
Well, I do have a movie lined up, but it's not in the freezing cold. It's actually somewhere nice.
Somewhere nice?
Yeah, Budapest.
Ooh. Oh, Budapest. That's beautiful. It's two cities, Buda and Pest, and you're right on the Danube, on the river. It's beautiful.
That's awesome. Let me back to you, George, for a minute. Something I always have to credit you. I'm the film awards editor here at Variety. I'm always looking at this through an awards lens. And you're one of the champions that we look for in a person who has a lot of access to making film and giving people their proper due. I have I'm going to try to bring it pretty close. I have a picture here that Variety took 8 years ago. It's you and Damien Bashir.
Oh, yeah.
At the Oscars. And the rumor is because of that meeting, that's why Damien Bashir is in the movie today, or one of the reasons.
Well, I mean, I'd seen the movie, but, you know, you've done this long enough now, you know, it's sort of the circuit once you're in the nominating, you know, once you've been nominated, because it's the Golden Globes and it's the Oscars and you're doing all these, you know, these things would have been done in front of an audience and, you know, all that kind of stuff. So you end up spending a lot of time together. And it was fun because it was a fun group. It was Jean Dujardin and Damien and Brad and Gary Oldman. So it was a really fun group. And Damien and I really hit it off. And having seen his movie and then paying attention to his career more so afterwards, you know, he has this, there's a gentleness to him and an intelligence, a very real quiet sort of beautiful intelligence to him. And, you know, I just called him up and said, you want to come be an astronaut? And he said, you know, he said something about being thrilled to be a Mexican physicist. And, you know, and I was like, bring it on. I love it.
Awesome. Kaylin, and you can tell me the truth, it's fine. You're not going to get in trouble. How many George Clooney movies had you seen before you got the part?
Two.
Do you remember which ones?
I remember one, but I can't remember the other one. I know he was in Fantastic Mr. Fox.
There you go. That's the only one you're actually allowed to see.
Yeah, that's good.
I mean, literally, that's the only film you're allowed to see. I mean, you can watch Batman and Robin because it doesn't harm anyone.
Yeah.
Doesn't help anyone. But yeah, other than that, I don't think there's any, you know, I don't think there's anything I've done that you're of age yet. Yeah.
How old were you when you got the part and how old are you now?
So I think I was, it's a long time, and I think I was 7. Yeah, 7. And I'm right now 8.
George, and a lot of changes have happened for you in the last few years. And I'm just kind of in the spiritual mode because the world is on fire. But you being a dad now, there is a scene in the movie, I'm not going to give anything away, but where you are looking for her in where you can't see her come to my voice.
Yeah.
And I call it the whale, the parent whale that you only have if you have kids.
Yeah.
And I don't know if you could have done this 10 years ago in the same manner. Do you think, was there any type of like connection for you?
Yeah, there is. I mean, certainly, you know, you don't go through life without being affected. Certainly by, you have children. I have 2 3-year-olds and so you don't go through life without having that affect you. And yes, you're absolutely right. The sound of that loss is, you know, it was devastating when we did it, and it was devastating to cut it together because you do have that sense of, you know, there's a part of this film in general that is about isolation and our inability to communicate and our inability to be near the people we love. And that is a very specific example of taking away and losing something that you care deeply about. And so, yeah, I think you're right. I think that, you know, you don't think about it much because just having children and getting into it, you're so focused on, you know, just getting through the days, you know, as you know.
Yeah.
I'm lucky my kids are 3, so I don't have to deal with Kalen kind of going to school. I don't have to teach him trigonometry on Zoom.
Yeah.
But you know, it is a, you know, it is a tremendous responsibility, and you start to understand that there's nothing that matters more.
Kalen, bring me to the moment that you saw the movie for the first time, when he sent it over to your Netflix queue or sent you a copy of it. What did it feel like to watch yourself on a screen? Because you probably saw it at home, not a movie screen.
A computer, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, it felt a little bit weird because I was actually sitting up here, then I just seen me up there. It was a little bit strange. And I remember my sister saw it and she said, "Kalen, look at your big head. You look how big you are." And I was like, a little bit offended by that. But like, I was like, I'll take it.
Yeah.
Your sister's done 2 mean things in this whole entire time. We'll help you with your homework and criticizing you on film. So we'll have a talk with her soon enough. George, you're coming to a milestone in your life. You're going to be 60 next year.
Yeah, man. Thanks for bringing that up.
You're like
Kalen's sister right now.
No, I was saying you've been working for a long time, and you've been killing it the whole time, and in many ways, this is the largest thing you've ever done. One of the most personal things you've ever done. At this point in your life, what are you finding yourself attracted to? What are you seeking?
Well, you know, I mean, there are different things. First of all, it has to be something that you're willing to spend a year and a half or 2 years of your life on if you're going to direct it. And so it has to be, you know, it has to start with a story that you're interested in. You know, at the time when I was pitching this, I, you know, the idea of this, the way I wanted to tell the story, I said I wanted to do it as a meditation. I don't want it to be lots of banging and smack. I want the silence to be important. And I said, and I also want it to be a story about, you know, dealing with, you know, playing out all of these things we're dealing with, playing out the denying of science and playing out anger and hatred and divisions in between the people in the United States, but divisions between the countries, divisions inside all of these other countries, and the hatred that plays out in the Philippines or in Hungary or places like that. And if you play those out 30 years from now, that you could, it's not inconceivable that you could blow, you know, the world could look like that. You know, we sort of patterned it after the satellite views of California and the wildfires, you know, and then we got the COVID, and it became much clearer and sort of changed the way we edited and told the story. I took a lot more lines out, was that it became clear that what's so deeply important is our ability to communicate and be near the people we love and how deeply that affects us when we can't. And, you know, with the end of it having some hope, some redemption, that was key, because it can't just be, you know, this dystopian, you know, just, it can't all be nihilistic. There had to be, you know, we fashioned it all after a sort of a modern telling of On the Beach, which we put a clip in. But on the beach, everybody, there is no hope at the end. And I always wanted there to be some redemption. And, you know, when you see the movie, I think you get that you know, there's a man who's filled with regret who finds redemption. And I think, you know, that was important.
Well said. One of the greatest aspects of the film, besides Martin Rue's great cinematography, my favorite score of the year, in Alexandre Desplat, like crazy, crazy good. How did that come together? I think that was that being cut during COVID with him putting it in?
Well, so, you know, we worked on it for a long time. I sent him the script and, you know, I've done, I don't know, 8 films or something like that with Alexandre. We're really dear friends. And we talked about instrumentation and what we wanted to do. First, we discussed synthesizer. We discussed a lot of different kinds of, and we were like, no, this is actually, and once I realized, you know, I had a lot more lines and I started taking out lines because Kaylin doesn't speak. And so if she's not going to speak, the only lines I would do were sort of, you know, would just be laying pipe and would just be trying to inform an audience that's not supposed to be there. So as I was taking out lines, I called up Alexandre and I said, you're going to write a lot more music than you've written for in a movie, because the score is going to have to tell the story, because there's no one talking. There has to be, the score is going to have to do it. And he started working on, started sending me pieces of music, beautiful pieces. And then I wrote him, I said, now this sequence, and all you could see when we did it was, you know, the astronauts laying inside this room. And this is the blood scene, you know. And I said, the blood is going to be dancing. It's going to be moving in a, you know, like a ballet. I said, so I need a piece of music. So he had to, he's like, in French, he's like, you want me to write the music for a ballet of blood? And I was like, yes, that's what I want. And without even being able to see the effects, he wrote this beautiful piece of music for it. You know, he's just one of the greatest composers in the game ever. And he has a great understanding of storytelling with music. And, you know, and then we had to record it in COVID. So I have a screening room here where I edited. I had the editing room back here and from home. And that's, you know, you do it all sort of on Evercast or Zoom, you know, you're bouncing back and forth and cutting. But scoring, Alexandre couldn't get into England where we were doing it at Abbey Road. So he's conducting it from Paris on via Zoom. We're recording it with the orchestra at Abbey Road in London. But they can only do 15 musicians at a time because you can't have that many people in the room. You have 130-piece orchestra in there. And then I'm here at 4 in the morning watching it live in L.A. Grant and I are sitting in a chair here with like 3 different Zooms going. And we had to piece it together. And, you know, usually I'd be at Abbey Road and Alexandre would go, what do you think? And we'd talk about, you know, the intent of the scene and what it needs and what emphasis it needs. And this was really tricky because we're only hearing it in pieces and you had to wait to stack all those stems together and hear them. And when it came together, I mean, you just, you know, you hear it orchestrated, and the fact of the way that he had to do it remotely just makes it even that more of an accomplishment, you know?
Yeah, for sure. My God, knowing that now, especially. Yeah. Woo. Kaylin, what was the hardest thing you shot when you were there? What's like something that was the hardest thing for you to do?
Well, it was probably going to Iceland in the coldest conditions, because I felt sometimes really cold, but then sometimes really cozy, but mostly really cold.
Kaylin, remember how we were staying at a hotel at the foot of the glacier, and remember how we'd have to drive up? You drive up for about an hour, wasn't it, to get there?
Yeah.
And the temperature would keep dropping as you got up there. But I'd come downstairs and I'd see Kaylin outside at the hotel playing outside. You know, she was all for the somewhat cold. And Kaylin, remember the when we went had to go get into that big pod and we were walking in that snowstorm and we were walking in the, you know, all of that section, walking the snow. Remember how it kept blowing you over?
It must have. Like, it looked treacherous to just like walk through, let alone stand there and just let it like rattle you around.
Well, and look, Clayton, we shot this on 65mm. So you're holding an unbelievably heavy camera, you know, a steady camera handheld with this kind of wind blowing, like 6 guys trying to hold the camera guy up. And we're trying to get the shots we want. And we're waiting for this, you know, these gusts to come in because it really sells the look of it. But, you know, Kaylin and her mom they'd be sitting, we're all in like, these weird SUVs with these giant tires. Remember, Kaylin, we'd be sitting there and then all of a sudden they'd come knock on your window and go, let's go. And she'd come running out with her goggles on and we'd have to shoot really quick when the weather was bad.
Two more questions. I know I'm wrapping up on time. Caitlin, I have a question for you because we're getting to know you. What's your favorite movie? What's the movie that you'll watch 100 times?
Harry Potter.
Which one? All of them or just the first one?
I like the first one.
So is the original. It's a good answer.
Yeah, I like the Alfonso Cuarón one too.
Throw it out there. Good.
Yeah.
And then my last for you, Mr. Clooney.
Now it's Mr. Clooney.
Yeah, it's Mr. Clooney. Random yesterday, I was watching TV, I was just surfing, and I saw Grant Heslov in Dante's Peak and True Lies. Literally, both were on TV yesterday.
Yeah.
And I was like, and then I just was thinking about today, and I was like, you know, you've been with him so long, like partnering and stuff. I feel like I needed to give you like a minute just to like talk about that partnership. But just in other things, Calico Joe, any updates on Calico Joe?
Yeah, we're working on the script right now. It's a pretty cool thing. Have you read the book at all?
No, I haven't.
You should read the book. It's a really easy read. You could do it in a couple of, you know, I did it in a couple of days, but it's so it doesn't take up too much time, but it's a really great story. And, you know, we got this call from Bob Dylan going, I optioned a John Grisham book. Do you want to adapt it? And I was like, and work with you? Yeah, I would love it. So we're working on that, and we're in pre-production on The Tender Bar. So we go to Boston, you know, if COVID lets us.
Yeah.
And again, it's always been Grant. You know, Grant and I, it's a true story. He really did, you know, give me $100 to get headshots in 1982. So we've been, and he was 19 years old, and he'd just done a guest shot on Joni Loves Chachi. And so he was working, and I was sleeping on the floor of a closet of another friend's apartment. And, you know, we've looked out for each other over the years. And he was a journeyman actor, and sometimes that's a tricky thing to do as you get older. And Steven and I, Soderbergh and I, had a company then called Section 8. And Grant and I had been working together forever. You know, we produced our small films and produced our, you know, plays and did all that stuff. We acted in plays when, you know, in the early 80s. And then he just said, you know, I don't want to rely on being an actor in my adulthood. You know, as I get older, I've got kids now and I need something. And so I said, well, let's make it official and come over and work at Section 8. And he sort of came over and, you know, Grant and I are, it's a funny pairing. You know, he's my best friend. We've never had a disagreement, much less an argument, you know, and we've spent time for months together, and we were just, you know, we were just really close friends. We look for the same projects. We agree on things. He'll sit by the monitor, you know, when I'm shooting myself, and your tendency is to not do a lot of takes on yourself, just out of modesty.
Yeah.
And so I'll go, okay, it's fine. And Grant will stick his head out and go, do another take, schmuck. And I'll be okay. So it's just ease, you know. I mean, when we're on location, generally, even with my family and his family, we all live in the same house. You know, we're really close. He lives a block away. You know, I walked over to his house yesterday with the dog and the kids, stood outside and waved. We can't go in.
I'm glad. It's just really good to see you guys still just making magic together.
We're having fun.
Yeah.
You know, you know, we're lucky, obviously. We get to do the things we want to do. And, you know, as long as we can, you know, keep playing in this big playground for a period of time, as long as they let us play, we'll do it. They'll take them away at some point.
Yeah. Well, it was, Caitlin, it was so good meeting you today. Listen, congratulations. You are a great actress, and I can't wait to see all the movies you're going to be making, especially the next one in Budapest.
Yeah.
It's going to be a lot nicer there. And George, you are one of my heroes. I mean that honestly. You're one of the great ones. So I'm just really excited to see you keep killing it the way you're doing it.
Thanks, Clay. I appreciate it, man.
All right, everyone, please be safe.
Be safe. We're almost through this, you guys. We're close. Hang in there.
The Midnight Sky begins a limited run in theaters on December 11th. And will stream on Netflix starting December 23rd. And that's it for this edition of Variety's Award Circuit podcast. Drew Griffith edited this episode, and Michael Schneider is the producer. Be sure to subscribe to the Award Circuit Podcast on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, or wherever you download podcasts. Also, head to Variety.com and click on the Award Circuit tab to find the latest Oscar predictions and key races, as well as your daily fix of news, analysis, and reviews. For Janelle Riley, Jazz Tanke, and Michael Schneider, I'm Clayton Davis. We'll see you on the circuit.
With the Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.